Hello, Hyrule!
Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name's Chris. Hey, Pete.
What up?
So, a few episodes ago, now it feels like it was like two calendar months ago that we recorded this, but a few episodes ago, you and I talked about how I got super into Tetris again.
Yes.
And how I wanted weird skins for Tetris.
Yes.
You mentioned Tetris 99 in that episode, and it sent me down a weird rabbit hole where I went to the eShop and I saw Tetris 99 there, but for some reason, I then downloaded Pac-Man 99.
Okay, I forgot that's a thing.
Me too, and that's why I was like, let me download this.
How's that going for you?
Well, I played a lot of Pac-Man this week. I think I'm like kind of good at Pac-Man.
Okay.
Probably better competitively than I ever would have gotten at Tetris anyway.
You found your niche. That's cool.
Found my niche. But it kind of got me thinking, these 99 games are a really fun way to like kind of reimagine these series and whatnot.
Sure.
Right?
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
If they were to do a Zelda 99, what are some ways that they could do this? Have we talked about this previously? I don't think
we have. A Zelda 99, it would have to be a dungeon crawl, right?
It would have to be a dungeon crawl, I'm thinking, right? And I'm thinking it would have to be NES Zelda.
That makes the most sense. You might be able to make an argument for Link to the Past, but maybe
Link to the Past. The thing about these 99 games is like they're free to download,
yeah,
but like you can buy skins and DLC and like extra modes.
Yeah,
so like let's say you start with NES, and then like if you want to spend money on Link to the Past, the best game of all time,
mm-hmm,
you can do so, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I caught that.
So, okay. So you're going through dungeons. There's 99 people total going through the same dungeon as you, right?
Sure.
I would imagine everyone's probably got to have that dungeon filled with similar enemies.
It's got to be. I mean, the dungeon and the enemies may change the more players that drop.
Maybe. But like everyone has to be on equal playing field for that specific round.
Sure.
Right? Round to round, maybe they could jump between different templates or whatever, but for that round. And like the thing about the 99 games is you're not just playing Tetris or just Pac-Man.
Mm-hmm.
When you do particularly well, right? Like when you get a Tetris or when you eat a bunch of ghosts really quick,
yeah,
you can actually send ghosts or send more Tetris blocks to other players.
Yeah.
You can like attack, you can play aggressively and attack other players.
This sounds exactly like how Mario 35 worked, which if y'all never got in on Mario 35 before they took that down.
I did not.
Oh, it was the best of these games, Chris. It was the best of this genre of game and they just took it away.
I fully believe you. So how did that game handle the sort of offense of these games? You know, how did you find a way to toss more bad guys onto other players' screens?
It's basically, I forget if this is the default or if this was like a mode you had to enter, but like any enemy that you take down in Mario 35 gets sent to another player.
There you go. I like that.
So you can be running through and suddenly there's a bunch of Bowsers because a few players made it through the castle.
Okay. That's very scary. So I super like the idea, especially like if you introduce a time limit of some sort in that specific map piece.
Yeah.
So if you take out like three Bokoblins in 15 seconds, those three Bokoblins go to another player's map.
Yeah.
And the fun little visual effect they can do there also is like, so you have your game in the center screen and you have a bunch of small multiplayer games that you could see on the borders.
Yeah.
It would be fun if the Bokoblins that you take out do their little malice orb from like Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom.
Wait, are we doing NES or what are we doing here?
No, totally NES, but like let's, you know, do a fun little pull from the future games.
Okay.
And have them malice orb their way to the other player's screens when you take them down.
Uh-huh.
As a fun little visual effect.
A malice orb being what exactly? You mean from Wind Waker?
No, like when you see the Bokoblins get sent down to Hyrule,
uh-huh,
in those orbs of malice.
Oh, the malice missile missiles that are you see in the trailers.
Malice missiles, yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. No, that'd be kind of cool.
Are there any other fun little things that we could do here that would give it a nice little Legend of Zelda twist?
I don't know what this would constitute, but I would want to introduce a tingle mode of some kind. Like, if you do something cool or get a certain score in a certain amount of time or get a certain amount of medals for taking down players, then you can enter tingle mode and something for that.
It's got to be like that rupee party mode from Four Swords where it's it's just, oh, you're just getting crazy amount of rupees.
What would you call it? Like Legend of Zelda 99 sword? Like what would it... 99 sword adventures?
No, Zelda 99. Keep it simple. 99 Sword Adventures is the worst title of anything I've ever, even if it's hypothetical.
I think, what would the timer be? Would your health just be consistently dropping? Because the other, like, 99s and 35s, etc., don't really have a health bar.
I mean, I like the idea of, like, you've got to get through the full dungeon in a certain amount of time, but it shouldn't be, like, 1 minute to get through the full dungeon. But I do like, if you're taking a very long time, they should be overloading your screen with more and more Bokoblin. Like, sure. you got to be moving. I don't know for a timer for each individual map fragment, though.
Yeah, it would be, because what if like the dungeon you're in is like full of poison and like if you're in there too long you just die or something like that?
Yeah, but that doesn't,
and that's why I have to extend the timer.
That doesn't feel like a 2D Zelda thing.
No, I guess it doesn't. I mean, if we're talking about like a top-down Zelda, like a grid-based one, like it would be harder, I think, to constitute everybody having a health bar and like every so often you get health and like just extends the game forever, right?
Three heart max.
I can live with that. I can live with 3 heart max.
But yeah, okay. You know what? I feel pretty good about the state of Zelda 99 right now. I think you and I are ready to talk about what we really came here to discuss in this episode. Zora's River and Zora's Domain.
Two or maybe three locations that start with Zora's.
Yeah. The sort of eastern Zora area of Ocarina of Time.
Why is it that you have Gerudo Valley, Goron City, Kokiri Forest, but Zora has the apostrophe S?
Oh, you're right. This should just be Zora River.
Yeah.
Zora, as a plural, actually has a great ring to it. Well, you know what? Gerudo's Valley feels super weird, but maybe that's just because we grew up with
it. Right. We've been saying it because, like, if you say Gerudo's Valley, it sounds like you're saying multiple valleys, you know?
Is it because this is, like, King Zora's River?
Actually, it could be that.
But it's kind of not, right? Because, like, King Zora is not the end-all be-all. Like, there is a deity above King Zora, similar to the Great Deku Tree, and we're going to talk about it.
That's like a guardian deity. Okay. It's not really the same thing.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a missed opportunity. But if anyone knows the reason why this is apostrophe S Zora's,
actually,
if there's like a good reason, let us know.
That does raise a good question. Actually, hang on a second, because later when the Zora become Rito and Wind Waker, they change the name of their home to Dragon Roost Isle, which does talk about their guardian deity. So something happened along that way where it's like, we're not going to call this Rito something. This is about Jabun or whatever his name was.
Yeah, huh.
Valu, sorry.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I never really thought about that. What's in a name? I never really thought about this one. Anyway, do you want to give us a quick recap before we set sail?
Oh, a recap. Let's see.
10 episodes in and we've done like two things, it feels like.
Do you want the whole game or just like last time? Because last time we were at La La Ranch.
Generally, what are we doing here? What's our quest?
Our quest is to collect the 3 spiritual stones, green, blue, red. We're on our way for the third one, which is blue.
Bing, bang, boom. We're going to get that blue stone.
I want some of that blue stuff. We're going to get it. It's kind of a trek for this one, right? Because like before, we had to climb up a mountain, but somehow this one feels like a slog.
The mountain is very much like narrow hallway bending in on itself. It's also very vertical.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is like, you're going through a big old valley here.
Yeah.
It does feel a little bit longer. It feels more spread out.
Well, also to get to Goron City, like you have to just run, right? And there's a stop along the way with shops and such. For Zora's Domain, you gotta run, you gotta throw a bomb, keep running, pick up a Kuko, jump once, keep running, run for a while, then you gotta do some running.
Uh-huh.
Then eventually you do make it to a waterfall.
I am glad that you're not revisiting this place through that route too many times throughout this game, because it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, thankfully there's a shortcut for Zora's Domain. I'm really grateful for that.
There's a couple.
Although it's not actually in Zora's Domain, which is kind of weird to me, because the shortcut to Goron city is in the city, but Zora's Domain, you still have to make it into Zora's Domain after you take the shortcut.
Right. The shortcut itself exists in Zora's River. Zora's River is going to be the first area that we talk about today. Do you want to give like a high level description kind of what this place is, Zora's River?
It's a river in like a canyon, which suggests to me that the river kind of wore away this part of the land.
Yeah, you got those like sort of brownish rock walls.
Yep.
Which is interesting. You kind of just stop seeing those as you play this game.
Oh yeah. After a while, you just ignore the textures. It's like, you know, watching the maze screensaver from early Windows computers.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, your eye is really drawn to the two grassy areas of land separated down the center by a flowing river that if you try to swim up, you just can't. It's just downstream.
Yeah.
It's cool. I mean, it's a nice kind of lush forest. Like, it's no Kokiri forest, but
no,
I
wouldn't call this lush at all. If even a forest, to be honest.
No, I guess it's more of a valley. It's more of a valley.
There's like, what, one tree? I think there's one tree.
One tree right at the start. This is one of those trees that's like, once you know, you know. You want to bang your head into that tree and get a sculpture.
Yep, it's one of the ones that's burned in. That's a burned in sculpture.
Not a lot to talk about with enemies in Zora's River.
No, not really.
It's Tektites. We saw those on Death Mountain. And it's Octoroks, which I believe we've also seen.
We saw them in the future in Kokiri Forest. Yeah. Right. But I will say these are the blue Tektites, which can skate on water, which I hate. I hate that.
I mean, it's kind of a cool effect.
It's neat that they made that happen, you know, in an N64 game. At the same time, I hate them.
Do they give you a particularly hard time?
I just prefer when an enemy can be knocked into water and killed that way.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. There's also like just so many pieces of weird land that kind of elevate over the water, like walkways of land.
Oh, yes. That's more later towards like the end, like the opposite end of the river. Yeah. You get like some Xenoblade heckin' land bridges, which look really good on 3DS because they included some foliage and trees and such. It looks really good.
Oh, I wish I checked that out. But yeah, there's a lot of small things that we'll talk about in this area. The first thing that I really want to talk about, we got the Bean Boy here.
Bean Man.
Sorry.
Big Bean Man.
Sorry. If there's one thing I learned from editing the Whopper Castletown episode, it's that this is not a Bean Boy, but a Bean Man.
This is a war vet and you should respect him.
I don't know. I fully disagree. Anyway, the Bean Man is here. We talked about him in the Castletown episode. He's sitting out here eating a bag of beans.
He's going to town on him.
He's got a tattoo, and I did some digging through the Bean Man wiki. And
The Bean Man, you mean the Zelda wiki page for the Bean Man, right?
That's
he doesn't
what I
have
said.
His own wiki.
Can you imagine? Listen, there's a lot of information about this Bean Man. So the bean seller has a tattoo on his arm. We talked about it. Do you know what that tattoo says? Because I do now.
Off the top of my head, no.
Today, in my 35th year on this planet, I learned what the Bean Man's tattoo says.
What is it?
It says bean.
Does it really?
He's got the word bean tattooed on his arm. Yes.
Nice. Nice. Very nice.
This also kind of furthered it in my brain that this is not the same guy that's in the treasure shop.
Oh, very much not. Like, after that episode, I went back and looked at the two of them. They're two very different dudes.
They're similarities. They're shirtless dudes with an arm tattoo.
And also, clearly, if this dude is a war vet, that tattoo is not a reason why, as Travis suggested.
Sure.
Unless he's a vet of the Bean War. I don't think he was.
Okay. Well, I do want to just posit one thing that I literally just thought about right now. Pete, I am sending you a picture on Discord.
Oh god.
You looking at what I'm looking at?
I'm looking at the Bean Man.
What's going on with those ears?
He has Hylian ears? He has Hylian ears.
Oh, so he's just Hylian.
Okay. Yeah. Why? What were you getting at?
I don't know. Why? every person and every NPC in this game has pointed ears.
I think a lot of them do, don't they?
I don't know, man. Time is folding in on itself in my brain right now.
Because that's the whole point. Is you got Hylians and humans, which humans are like basically Hylians that can't hear Hylia anymore. That's the whole idea, right?
Yes. Okay. So he hears Hylia, and Hylia is saying to him, "Keep eating those beans, boy.
Yeah,
keep eating those beans, man." So Let's talk about what he actually functionally does. He sells us magic bean. He says, chomp, 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 how about some magic beans? They aren't selling very well. You can buy them from him for 10 rupees, it starts out as.
How many travelers do you think this guy sees? Of course he's not going to get a lot of customers out here.
Yeah.
You should go to Castletown.
It's a weird place, right? Because the Zora stay in their domain. They do not come out here. So it's really anyone going into Zora's domain. And right. We'll find out in a second. But you can only get into Zora's domain if you have an association with the royal family.
Uh-huh.
Very small subset of people who can actually come through here may actually encounter this guy. He just wants to be on his own?
I mean, he seems to be living his best life.
Maybe.
I think I'll give him that much.
So this is a unique NPC in that every time you purchase beans from him, they go up in price.
From his very dirty bean bag that he has.
Absolutely disgusting bean bag. It's very grody.
It's moldy?
Ugh. Oh, and he's just eating it. Come on, what is his deal? This is like the Enigma character for me this season of Hello Hyrule. This is like our hurdy-gurdy man of years past.
You think so? You think there's some kind of conspiracy with this dude?
No. Just for me personally, this is the character that will inhabit my mind.
Oh, really? Okay, that's the one that you're hyper-focusing on?
I think so.
Hey, Chris, what does magic beans taste like?
Oh.
We do see them.
Yeah, it's like a pea pod with three different color little peas in it.
Yeah, it kind of looks like peas in a pod, but if peas in a pod were jelly beans, like jelly beans in a pod.
Yeah, he's eating them by the truckload. So like they must be
gobbling them down. Does he have teeth?
Nah.
Because that might give us a clue. Like if his teeth have completely rotted away. I don't see teeth in there, right?
Oh,
so like that's
no.
Those are sugary treats.
Okay, so like they must be extremely sweet at least.
Yeah, his mouth is rotting away. And that's why we don't see him. Spoilers, we're not going to see him here in the future. It's because he has let himself decompose.
Or maybe he did go start to finally sell his stuff at Castletown and he's one of the Redeads.
Oh, he got warped into Tarbina, I think, didn't he?
Oh, that's true. He ate so... He ate so many of his psychedelic jelly beans that he got transported to Tarbina.
Okay, I like that for him. What do magic beans taste like? I've got to imagine these are just jelly beans, right? Like jelly beans wrapped in a pea pod.
I think that could be the case. The thing that I find interesting, because he says they're magic. I don't know how they become end magicked, but like each one, you have a red, a blue, and a yellow, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an extra green in there that I'm forgetting. But like they have to like grow in a specific way. So like maybe each one has a different flavor.
Maybe, yeah. It kind of looks to me like warheads. They look like a hard candy.
He's just eating a whole pack of Starburst with each pea pod.
Kinda. Yeah. And then he's also like getting addicted to the sugar as time goes on.
Is it sugar, Chris? Or is this a happy fun time adult candy?
No.
That he's been eating?
No, no, no.
Psychedelic and psychotropic.
Okay. So what does that taste like to you?
Oh boy. Good enough to keep eating. I'm going to say, you know what? Hang on a second. Red, yellow, blue, green. I'm going to say savory, sour, salty, and bitter.
Bitter.
Sweet. No, sweet. I didn't say sweet yet, did I?
Sure. Yeah. Sweet. That could make sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You got one of each and you can like, you know, just munch down.
Let's talk about the magic beans in general, what they do functionally.
Oh, yeah. You can only grow them when you're a kid, first off.
Right.
If you were to somehow use them in the future, they would have no effect, I think, because blighted soil would be the excuse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can grow them as a kid, which will grow a little a bean sprout kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. You find the specific patches of soil where you can put stuff.
Oh, right. I should have started with that. You find like the little, which if on the N64, it's very much a tile set. Mm-hmm. You can tell they just plonked down a square tile to put the beans in.
It looks like a little Cheez-It.
Yeah. But on the 3DS, it looks more like an anthill that you can pop the seeds into the top. Firstly, in these exact spots, you also want to drop bugs into out of a bottle because they will ferret out gold sculptulas for you to kill.
Exactly. The thing I don't like about the magic beans is I always feel like, oh, I need to put a bug in this spot.
Yes.
Like once you put a magic bean in there, I don't know how you get the bean out of it. So it feels like you're closing these off.
I could be wrong about this, but I think it doesn't matter what order you do it.
So, okay. So you could put a bug in a spot where there's a bean already grown.
I'm pretty sure.
I never knew that, but that makes some sense.
Yeah, because especially in a lot of spots, like if you plant a bean sprout in the present, water it and go to the future. Actually, I don't know if you actually have to water it.
You don't have to water anything.
Oh, if you do water it though, I think you get fairies or something.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but if you then travel to the future, it will have grown into like a lily pad kind of leaf that you can step on and it will levitate and drive you somewhere.
9 times out of 10, this will bring you to like a heart piece, I feel like.
9 times out of 10, it will lead you to almost nothing. It'll lead you to like rupees.
Yeah, but that's the magic of it, is it's a levitating plant that kind of brings you to an area. Yeah,
it's kind of neat, but far from mandatory. I don't think you miss out on really any, like maybe 2 to 3 heart pieces.
Yeah,
if you don't do this.
But all of that out of the way, these exist all over. We're probably not going to mention them too many times.
It's a bit annoying because like you have to keep mental track of which ones you've dropped bugs into.
Yeah, it's like we've talked about that. You know, I'm not even going to go into it because we've talked about the gold sculpture rewards to death. But like, it's pretty easy to get the valuable rewards for gold sculptures.
Yeah,
without keeping track of things. But if you're going for 100%, you have to definitely mark it off.
What they should have done was make the dirt spot look slightly different after you've gotten the sculpture out.
That's a good idea. That makes sense.
Like the hole slightly wider or something.
All right. So continuing along Zora's River.
Well, before we even continue, once you walk in, there's like some boulders you have to blow up. With, like you have to get the bombs at Dodongo's cavern first.
Right. So you can't make too much progress before that.
And I have a note here that Kaipora Gabora shows up and he says, "Hey, you have bombs. Do you want to blow up the bombs?" I think that's what he's here for, because almost every time that I see Kaipora Gabora, he's here to tell me to do a thing that I'm literally about to do anyway.
Uh-huh.
So you use your bombs, you blow up the boulders, then you get to the spot where the Bean Man is, which has like 1 or 2 Kukos roaming around. Are these his Kukos?
Or do they just live? Is this just natural Kuko habitat? Are the Kukos eating the magic beans?
That's a great question. Maybe that's how he discovered. Like he got magic beans to feed his Kukos and he's like, you know what? These are mine. I like these.
Yeah, I mean, or they could be eating the bugs that are probably all around too.
Could be that too.
Yeah, I don't know. These are the only Kuko. Are these the only Kuko that... Oh, no. We see Kuko in Gerudo Valley as well.
Yeah, they're in a couple different places.
Kuko are an adaptable species.
Yeah, I mean, they get around.
For sure.
And you have to use one to glide briefly over to the other bank of the river. That's how you continue at this point.
Yeah. If you didn't do the stuff in Kakariko Village, they're kind of forcing you to learn that you can jump with the Kukos here.
Right.
Which is cool and easy enough in the capacity that they're forcing you to do it.
Uh-huh.
There's also a few kind of heart piece puzzles in this general area for those who get really crafty with the Kukos.
Oh, like if you like pull it almost full circle around the whole path.
Yeah.
Like you can ferry the Kuko all the way up towards like nearly the end of Zora's River and then like ride it down the opposite leg of the river. That'll lead you up like to a ladder that you can climb up to, that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's an interesting route. I don't usually do that. I usually just, you go a little bit past that cliff there with the ladder and then you just use the Kuko to jump over to the left side of it where the ladder is, and you could just land on
a
little platform there. Yeah.
Me overly complicate things?
Yeah, it's pretty simple if you do it that way. There are a few little fences that just for some reason block off areas.
I don't know what that's for. I think it's if you wanted to ride Epona this way.
Oh, sure. Maybe. It's video game stuff, right? It's forcing you to do the Kuko stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of bridges kind of connecting pieces of land, especially like the elevated pieces of land. There's a lot of platforms.
This is like, I think the most like twisty turny area of the overworld, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Something about like, there must have been like a big flood that came through here in the river like years ago that like carved out all these strange shapes of this canyon.
It's very zigzaggy. It's very elevated, but it's also carved out enough so that the water can flow through underneath it.
Uh-huh.
So if you botch any of the platforming, the water will push you all the way back to the start.
You're going back to the start.
Yeah.
Which again, that just adds to how long this place takes to get through, the constant running. If anything, I feel like this bean spot spot that you have right next to the Bean Man is the most important one, because that leaf in the future will carry you directly to the end.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't need Epona.
There's also a secret grotto where that ladder is that I think just brings you to a fairy fountain.
Yeah, there's two different grottos. There's one like at the top of the ladder, and then there's one if you jump across like that ravine that you can jump into. I think they both have fairy fountains.
Yeah, I don't have any notes saying otherwise.
It clearly was not enough to take note.
There is something that is interesting enough to take note, though. There's a fun little side quest here with the frogs.
Oh, that's right.
The Fabulous Five Froggish Tenors. So you could see a couple of frogs poking out from one of the logs in the ravine.
Mm-hmm.
If you go over to them, Navi will say, some frogs are looking at you. Navi will say, some frogs are looking at you from underwater. If you pull your ocarina out, they all jump up on a log and just start looking at you while you have an opportunity to play.
Yeah, they want you to play songs from your repertoire, right?
Yep. I think the first one I played was just Zelda's Lullaby because of muscle memory. And they give you 50 rupees.
But nice.
Pretty much any of the songs.
I think the one they like the most is the Song of Storms, right?
Yes. Actually, when you play the Song of Storms, they have some dialogue. Singing in the rain, oh, what a feeling, ribbit. Which is just them referencing two real life songs.
Yeah, they're referencing Singing in the Rain for some reason in this game. That had to have been a localization thing, right?
Of course, of course.
So after that, though, they give you a heart piece.
Yeah, each time you play one of the five songs, Zelda's Lullaby, Saria Song, Epona Song, the Sun Song, and the Song of Time, one of the five frogs grows a bit. And then when all five are grown, if you pull your ocarina out again, they want to play another game with you.
I did not notice that they grow. I'm a little disconcerted by the fact that they grow.
It does not make a lot of sense. If you pull out your ocarina again, they say, look at us. We're all huge frogs.
Get him!
Yeah. And then Link blacks out. They say, we are the world famous Fabulous Five Froggish Tenors. Make us jump so we can eat the bugs flying above us. And then essentially you play a game in which you have to remember which note corresponds to each frog.
Whoa.
And the fly like flies over each individual frog and you have to like play the note for each frog.
Whoa. I never saw this.
Oh, what? Really? You get a heart piece for this.
There's another heart piece that way, huh? Okay. I didn't know.
Right. You also get a heart piece for doing the five songs previously. I don't know if we mentioned that.
We did.
Yeah, okay. So then, yeah, it's basically 14 notes total that you have to be able to hit.
Okay. Is it like the Skull Kids thing where you have to like hit it exactly? Or can you mess up?
You don't have room to mess up. And the thing is, you don't watch them play it first, like the Skull Kids.
So this is based on memory from the last songs you played.
My notes could be wrong, but my notes also seem very aggravated, so that's leading me to believe that, yes. I have in all caps, this took me so many tries. The timing window seems not great on the old version, but you do get another heart piece at least here for playing the song for all these little frogs.
Cool. I'm not sure why they can't feed their own selves, but I guess I'm glad they're grateful.
What is with video games and singing frogs?
I'm not sure what you mean.
So you got these frogs, you got like Mario RPG, you have like that whole...
The tadpoles.
You have Link's Awakening and the Song of Soul.
Oh, right.
And the Frog Choir, I think, is also in Majora's Mask, right?
They are. I think you only have to collect the missing frogs and then conduct them with a mask to sing a song. I think it's all you have to do with them, though.
It's just like, what is it about frogs? Is it because they're very vocal?
I would say that's kind of a theme of frogs in fiction, sure.
A logical enough association. Okay, outside of this subquest here, there is a waterfall at the end of Zora's River.
Gorgeous location.
It's very nice.
And this is after some weird like fixed camera things as you're going across some rope bridges.
Yeah. There's two or three extended bridges.
When you walk around the corner, like the camera like becomes fixed. Like you can't control it anymore.
Yeah. It kind of brings you down this narrow valley where the waterfall is at the end. Like you said, it's a beautiful looking set piece. There are some more of those extended platforms in this area. If you bring a Kuko all the way out here, you can jump for a heart piece in this general area.
That's right.
This is where the shortcut is.
Yeah, off to the right, when you show up, off to the right, there's like a little pool that you can dive into that will lead back to the Lost Woods.
Yeah, you can hear Saria's song playing.
I don't think that's true.
I did it earlier.
From this location, you can hear Saria's song?
If you get close to the shortcut.
That is... confusing because how is it transferring through water?
I don't know. They also do that a little bit in Death Mountain, though.
Right, but in Death Mountain, at least there's like, you can like make up a reason as to why like it's going through, like it's a cave and it's, you know, echoing through the tunnel.
Sure. But here's the thing though, Pete, and it's important to remember this, is that we're playing video games.
I'm almost certain you can't hear Saria's song from that end of the shortcut.
All right. Well, one of us is right. And the interesting thing, if you approach this waterfall, there's a little plaque on the ground here that says Sleepless Waterfall. The flow of this waterfall serves the King of Hyrule. When the king slumbers, so too do these falls.
That is an interesting choice of words.
When the king slumbers.
When the king slumbers. Because the song isn't to put the king to sleep, is it? Well, then again, if that song has been transferred down through generations, I guess at some point he did fall asleep to that.
Oh, I guess so. Oh, you know, I didn't even make that connection. So obviously the association to the royal family here is so that you know to play Zelda's song.
Yeah.
If you didn't pick it up previously with Gaypora literally telling you to your face that you need to do it. But I guess, yeah, the implication there is that this song used to put the king to sleep also. Do you think Impa was playing this for the king too? Like, do you think Impa would have to go room after room, put each member of the royal family to sleep by playing this song?
Just exhausted herself, has to go.
Right. Do you think it like also makes Impa sleepy and she has to like fight through the sleepiness?
That's why she's in charge.
That's why she, oh, it's that Sheikah willpower. Anyway, you play the Zelda's lullaby here. And this is another thing that just, this area sticks out in my brain because in my randomizer run, I did not get Zelda's lullaby for a very long time.
Oh no.
So if you don't get that early, you sure are blocked off from a lot of locations.
Here's the funny thing about this, though. This waterfall is not that, like, you know, powerful, by the way. Like, it's not falling from an extremely high height.
No.
You could probably just jump through it, right?
I mean, look, sure. You could say something about water pressure maybe bringing you down.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that's kind of not what happens. There's, like, a stone wall that, like, fully blocks you back here.
If it was, like, a ton of water and it was falling from from way high up, then I could understand that beating you down if you were to try and jump through it. But like, this does not seem like something.
No.
Even a small kid could jump through that.
It's just a weird old wall. I don't really know why you can't get it.
I think here's the thing though, it does reset if you let it sit too long. So once you've played the song, you should hoof it. But like at the same time, you probably don't have to play that song. Let's be honest, guys. You could jump through that.
You should be able to jump through that. I agree. Anyway, do we want to talk about what happens on the other side after we jump through that?
Yeah, you make it through to a place where, for all intents and purposes, don't want to be known that they're here, don't want anybody to visit them. They've put like blockades. I'm not sure if Ganondorf put those boulders down, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Zora did it themselves. You know.
That's right. You get to Zora's domain.
Fences and waterfalls you have to get through. And meanwhile, there's a little sign at the entrance like, "Welcome to Zora's Domain. We're so happy to have you here."
Zora's Domain. Oh. Oh.
Gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Love this place.
Great location. Great music. Love this music that the listener just heard, most likely, a second ago.
It's just lovely in here. It's like, this is what I would call a grotto. This is a grotto,
but, yeah.
I mean, it is kind of small for, like, what, a city? This is a city, right? Or are we not seeing everything?
It's kind of like a road. It's like you're going, there's, like, a main road that you go down.
This is just part of the path.
And it's like a cul-de-sac that kind of leads into where the King Zora is, and that's kind of it.
Where he's deeply exposed, by the way.
Exposed is a good word.
At least Gorons have a city. So I don't know what Zoro's Domain is supposed to be. Actually, I think about it in other games too, where Zoro's Domain shows up. I'm not sure what Zoro's Domain is supposed to be, because it just seems to be a place, like not a place where they sleep or where they shop or anything. This is just a place where Zora hangs.
Again, there's something about it that feels almost singular to King Zora. Zora Sora's domain, right? And he is kind of at the furthest point in this. He's in that big room deep in this. So again, it almost feels like he is the titular Zora as opposed to this being of the Zora people.
Zoras are like elves, right? They're like fantasy elves, but fish.
What?
I'm getting at something here.
Definitely like fish. Where do you get elves from?
Because in Breath of the Wild, it's revealed that they live like hundreds of years.
Okay.
Like plural hundreds.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel like things just live hundreds of years sometimes in Zelda games.
I think Zora in particular, though, live a very long time. I think that's something they're very specific about.
Okay.
That's why you get Zora in Breath of the Wild who knew you 100 years ago and are like, I'm old now and I hate you.
Okay. Fair. So we've got, those are the dark elves.
Oh, old people are dark elves? That's what we're getting at?
No. The ones that hate you.
Oh, you're talking about Monster Zora from the earlier games.
From the Fallen timeline.
Yeah. Man, I have a lot of questions about that, but that can wait. But anyway, back to my point. Zora are basically like, they fit the trope of elves, okay?
Fair enough. Something I've never thought about previously, but I kind of see where your mind is going.
Do we know that Zora sleep at all?
What?
This is a real question. Do we know that Zora sleep at all?
God, sometimes you find the most unimportant question in the world and then ask it.
Because the Goron have a city. We don't see them sleep really in Ocarina of Time, but they do have beds in Breath of the Wild and they sleep.
Okay.
I don't think we see anything like that in Zora's domain in Breath of the Wild. I don't think Zora sleep.
See, and that's why I was dismissive of your question. You're asking a question based on your recent playthrough of Breath of the Wild, mm-hmm. where it kind of makes sense to question these things. But in Ocarina, very few things have a proper bed other than Ingo and some of the Kakariko people.
Oh, wait, I just remembered something. I think in the back end, in Breath of the Wild, in the back end of Zora's domain, there's like a lower level where there are like these little pools that I've at least seen children Zora sleeping in. So I think there's something like that.
Yeah, I bet that these guys sleep underwater, right? Like, and like when they pop up from the water, that's like some of them just woke up because they heard something enter the water. You know how like sound gets weird when you're underwater and something?
Sure.
Right. So they hear that and they pop up. Yeah. There you go. They sleep in the water.
Oh boy.
You know what? I'll try to describe what Zora's domain kind of looks like at a glance.
Okay.
So we enter Zora's domain and we're kind of treated to like a large body of water in the center area. Structurally, upon first glance, there's almost an element of it that is reminiscent of the Great Deku Tree in that there is a swirling ascending path on the outermost border.
Oh, that's what you mean. You're on a high ledge is what this is. You enter Zora's domain on a high, like, rocky ledge.
Yeah, and there's just water underneath
that winds around the outside of, like, this crevice that has water at the bottom.
Yep, and there's a few waterfalls, or there's really one big waterfall here. Something cool that they really managed to pull off is, like, there's almost a reflective effect that happens on all of the walls in here that, like, even happens in the N64, which is like, looks super cool.
I won't be a jerk and like insist upon asking where the light's coming from. We can move on. But like, I do think that the effect is extremely cool though.
Well, you made a mention about where the light could be coming from. There certainly are a fair share of torches.
Unlit when you show up doesn't count.
Listen, it's the N64. It's not about what is always lit or unlit as much as the general idea that there are torches here.
If there was like a hole in the ceiling where sunlight can come through, that would be one thing.
Sure. There's certainly not that here. Something kind of cool. So as you continue down this path, it starts to kind of wind upwards on itself. You know, there's a little store here we'll talk about.
It kind of splits, right? One goes upstairs and one goes down towards the water level.
That's true. One goes down toward the water level. The water is kind of where you could speak to most of the Zora.
Hey, Chris, could you like describe what Zora looked like in this game?
I feel like the Zora looked like a species from one of the Sonic Adventure games that would exist wherever Knuckles came from.
What?
That I feel like that sentence will make sense to like 6% of our listeners.
Wait, I'm confused. Oh, wait a minute. Are you saying he looks like Chaos Zero? That's what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. He also does look like an iteration of Chaos, though. He totally does look like maybe Chaos 1 or 0.
So, oh boy, Chris, this is a very specific...
They're white and they're blue. They've got some beautiful blue outlines around their eyes. I actually super like the way their eyes look.
Yeah.
I've never really spent too much time looking at
them. They have huge, like, pupils so large that it looks like that's their whole eye, right?
Yeah, and like they have black eyes. guys with a blue outline. They have, they're in great shape. Just like, they're like, you know when people are like thinner body type, but they're ripped?
Yeah, yeah. Gymnast body, but big pecs.
They have long flipper arms that look like they could decapitate you.
They probably could, if you recall Majora's Mask.
Exactly. So I am glad that these are the nice ones. I'm glad that this is the game where they were like, you know what? Zoras as a species are nice now. King Zora has always kind of been nice to Link. It's a weird dichotomy there, but now they're all nice to Link.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think the Zora, like this kind of like albino Zora design is really, really cool, I think.
Yeah.
You don't really get them quite this way in future games.
No, I like this a lot. And I like the way that they kind of iterated on it in Majora's Mask too. They were like, oh yeah, this, but also now they play the electric guitar.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like a cool blue pattern on the back of their...
Oh yeah, like a blue leopard print.
Yeah, on the back of their head and on their backs. So yeah. Like Zora are also like they have these humanoid body types, but then also their head is another fish.
Do you think that was their intent on the N64, or like they just ran with it with Breath of the Wild?
What do you mean?
Do you think their intent for Ocarina of Time was that Zora's heads are fish? Or do you think that someone saw that design? Because like, do the back ends of their heads have fins and such? I'm not sure.
They have like flippers.
They do?
Not flippers. They look like the back of like a whale. They look like a whale tail.
Okay. Okay. In that case, I rescind the question because that was probably conscious.
No, I'm actually glad you mentioned that because I do think that Breath of the Wild definitely iterates on this design, right? Like it fully kind of realizes
it. Oh, they took it and ran, man. Like there's ones in Breath of the Wild that are like, oh yeah, this guy's head is a whole pufferfish.
I love it so much. Matt, like I genuinely, so like one of the things, I think I've spoken about this in early Hello Hyrule seasons. One of the things that most fascinated me about this weird series before we decided to dive deep into it is like the Zora and the Rito,
yeah,
and the way that the Zora turn into the Rito at some point.
We're going to have to schedule like a whole block of time for that, Chris.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by that. But I'm also like, I really like them individually as separate races. And like the fact that Breath of the Wild made both of them just like kind of the coolest iterations of themselves.
They're both the best version.
Great job, character designers.
While still kind of being similar. Like Ritos don't have like whole birds as their heads. They are bird people. But if you look at their proportions, like the length of their arms versus the length of their legs, they're very similar in that regard.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's great character work. So they talk about a few things. They say, we are the Zoras, the proud aquatic people. So you say you have some connection to the royal family. Well, what do you want from us? So like a little bit of like skepticism.
Mm-hmm. Which it seems normal. Also glad that they introduce themselves as like proud aquatic folk instead of the Gorons, where the first word out of their mouth is, we eat rocks.
Yeah.
What's up, little man? We eat rocks.
Definitely a different characterization here. Other ones will say things like, we haven't found Princess Ruto, even though some of us have searched as far as like Hylia. So you get a little taste of some of the events that are to come.
Didn't do a great job then, did you?
Mm-mm. They also talk about how they serve the King Zora and how Zora's fountain is the source of the river. And Lord Jabu Jabu lives in the fountain. He's the patron deity of the Zora. And Princess Ruto is in charge of preparing his meals morning and night.
Seems rude to Ruto. I mean, maybe it's like a religious thing, right? Like that's her duty as princess, that she has to feed the guardian deity.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's like a thing of trust between them, right? The deity trusts her.
So if she's missing, and oh, can we just say ahead of time that we know what's going on with Ruto right now?
I mean, if it serves the episode, sure.
You know what? I'll put it in my pocket. I'll put that in my pocket for like a few minutes from now.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? There might be a point later in this episode. If we talk about Zora's Fountain here, we might dive into
Okay.
But in any case, yeah, so we've got another deity of the Zora, right? This is another Great Deku Tree. That's kind of cool. They have one of those. I don't think that we explicitly had that with the Gorons, though. You can make some argument about the history of Dodongo.
What do you mean?
Like, where did we land with Dodongo? Was Dodongo something that maybe they worshipped at one point and then had to fight, or?
That is unclear, because I'm pretty sure the line that we came to with Dodongo is that they posed a threat because they eat bomb flowers and the Gorons need bomb flowers in order to,
King Dodongo. What about King Dodongo?
King Dodongo?
Was it just in general?
I think King Dodongo might just be like a T-Rex situation.
Fair enough.
Yeah, because King.
Sure. So they have something explicit, though. They have an explicit deity for the Zora in this game, which is cool. There's a Zora shop here. Do you want to talk about the Zora shop for a second?
Oh, Hyrule Business highlight.
Yeah.
Very nondescript, even on the 3DS, I have to say. This is a hole in the wall.
Yeah, it's like a weird water stone shop. It's just a texture on the shops from Castletown, honestly. But you got a couple of Zora in here.
Is there more than one in N64?
Yeah, no, there are two in the N64.
I cannot recall a second Zora in this shop.
The one unique thing, I guess, that's worth talking about here is there's a Zora's tunic in here for 300 rupees.
Yeah. Again, similar situation with the Goron tunic in Goron City, right? This is probably like for tourists or for people who are visiting.
Do you get this elsewhere in the game?
I could be wrong about this, but I think you get one from King Zora, right?
Yes. So you're right. You can buy the tunic here for 300 rupees, but it will also be given to Link by King Zora in the future.
Yeah, so don't bother.
When you rescue him. So don't buy it here. Another just complete ripoff. They didn't know what to fill these stories up with when they created all these stories.
Other stuff you can buy here. You can buy a bundle of 5 arrows, a bundle of 10 arrows, a bundle of 15 arrows. Is that right?
It doesn't matter.
I guess it doesn't matter.
1, 5, 10, let's say.
You got a recovery heart. You've got Deku Nuts, which how did you guys get these?
That's a great question.
You've got a delicious red potion, yum yum, and you've got 200 rupee fish.
This is just them rubbing it in your face.
This
Do not buy this fish. Do not ever buy fish in this game. There is a fish outside of this store that's 0 rupees that you can bottle up.
It's 5 feet away that you can catch with a bottle.
Yes, and you're going to need a fish. So they are banking on you getting desperate here.
So this place, the Zora shop has to be like just for non-Zora, right? The Zora have their own shop somewhere else.
Or is it, I mean, we know that Princess Ruto feeds Jabu Jabu and she feeds him fish,
yes.
These little fish.
Oh.
Is it just a matter of, hey, the Royal Zora family have money to spare.
Uh-huh.
So they know that they could charge 200 rupees for these fish.
Wait, you think the Royal family is operating this store?
No. What I'm saying is, do they charge Princess Ruto 200 rupees for this?
Oh.
And the royal family just has the money. They don't even question it.
If that is the case, that is, you gotta have some real Deku Nuts to charge the royal family for their what, multiple times daily ritual that they have to do?
Yeah, that's a little bit messed up, isn't it?
Their pet god that they have to feed?
Yeah, maybe they're not doing it. I'm just trying to find any reason why this thing makes sense anywhere in this game.
Again, I have to wonder if there's a food shortage. It does not explain. It does not explain the one you can just walk outside of this shop and catch yourself. It doesn't make sense.
Another thing that doesn't make sense are these torches throughout Zora's domain, right? They're unlit torches.
Uh-huh.
And similar to Death Mountain, if you go to the one lit torch and then pull out a Deku stick and then light the rest of the unlit torches on fire.
Yeah. What does it do exactly? Because you have to like run from the throne room upstairs,
yes.
Down, back down the stairs and around. Like a looping path along the ridges back down to behind the waterfall,
right?
To light torches back there,
right? So I mean, you're not getting all these in one go unless you've got the route mapped out. But it summons into fruition a treasure chest behind the waterfall, which gives you a heart piece. I love the idea of this little boy just entering Zora's domain. All the Zora are like, oh, hey, who's that?
It's a little Hylian.
Oh, that's interesting. He runs all the way upstairs, lights something on fire, runs all the way downstairs, lighting all these torches. And they're just like, what is he doing?
Every so often.
What? There was a treasure chest there?
Every so often he has to put away the stick and relight it just so it doesn't run out on him.
Like, there's just something about the high level play Link and like the NPC reactions to the silly motions he must be making that just tickles me.
He is like 7 or 8, so let those like fit, like where he'd just be running rampant with a flaming stick the second he shows up in here.
And the Zora down here are like, well, geez, I guess if anything, I'm glad there's an abundance of water everywhere, because yeah. That certainly doesn't seem safe.
What else is going to light on fire? fire except for the torches.
Around here? Maybe the skin of the Zora if it's not wet enough?
I guess maybe.
But probably not.
They have natural fish oils and such. It's not going to light up. Oh, wait a minute. I think in some games, actually, Zora are weak to fire.
Oh, the Zora's tunic in this game will make you weak to fire.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's similarly, Zora Link in Majora's Mask, I think, is weak to fire.
Yeah, actually, I didn't mention it a second ago, but the Zora's tunic, according to Nintendo's player guide, the Zora tunic is made of fish gills.
Oh, no.
So that stinks.
Wait, with what fish? Which fish? Is it Zora scales?
Yeah, weird that they use the word fish. Nintendo player's guide, what are you doing?
Oh, wait a minute.
It could be that $200 fish.
Yes, yes.
Or it could be the Zora.
That's got to be it. That's got to be why. Because, like, it's a special fish that you can, like, knit a Zora tunic out of. That's got to be it.
I guess so. But why would you choose the $200? I almost feel like you could much easier get some skin off of a Zora than, like, why would you knit it out of that pricey fish?
Well, this very expensive fish lets you knit a garment that allows you to breathe underwater. If you get a scale off of a Zora, that is the one that lets you dive deeper, I guess.
You're right. No, you get two scales in this game and they let you dive deeper. I don't know. That must speak to the creatures that they come from.
So what we're getting at here is that the 200 rupee fish and the ones you can catch are not the same fish, right? That has to be the answer.
Completely different sea life.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. There you have it, folks. We figured it out.
If we've proven anything in this episode, it's that.
Yeah.
And I don't feel terribly accomplished just yet, but maybe as we keep going.
I feel really accomplished. That explains a lot. That was sitting on my mind for a while.
If we keep pushing forward, we'll come across someone who has accomplished a lot in their lifetime. I'm talking about King Zora himself.
Oh, are you? Really? Okay. What exactly has this dude accomplished?
He's made a great cape. He wears a great cape. Someone else probably made it.
Yeah, he does wear a pretty good cape.
So good job on that, King Zora. His daughter is also completely lost, so that one doesn't work in his, that point doesn't work out in his favor.
Yeah, he does sit real good.
Sits great.
Can't move him. Cannot move this guy once he's sitting.
No, and when he does move, he doesn't move good.
What fish is his head?
What fish is his head? Asking the questions that everyone wants answered. I actually don't have any pictures of the back of his head.
If I recall, he is perfectly round.
He is perfectly round. He's just a demented looking creature.
Is it a turtle? Just,
No. Unfortunately. He's like a larger form of the other Zora, right? So like...
Oh, I see. He's got normal fish head, but like he ate so much that like it expanded and became round.
He's just very large, right? He's like the Goron shape of a Zora.
Well, actually, then again, because like in Breath of the Wild, I don't mean to talk this much about Breath of the Wild, but in Breath of the Wild,
it's a great game.
The King Zora there, he might be the only exception where his head is not a fish. He is a big whale man.
So you're referring to King Dorofin, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not universal.
He is definitely closer in relation to the Zora in that game, I think. I mean, he's big, he's large and in charge, but you could see the through line a little bit easier.
So do Zora just like worship the largest Zora?
I think it's possible.
Do they work like the aliens in Invader Zim? Like,
I wonder, right? Like, so we established that there's a relationship between King Zora's daughter, Ruto, and the deity, right? So, like, I've got to imagine it's something about the deity choosing the royalty.
Okay.
Right? There's probably a soft spot from the deity for specifically the royal family of the Zora.
Maybe he is channeling the guardian deity's fish cells, etc., or whatever species Jabu Jabu is, and that's why he's shaped different.
That is closer to a whale, yeah. That makes a little bit more sense, making him more whale-like in nature.
Yeah.
So he's got a red cape that we talked about. He's also got a weird red crown.
Well, it's like a normal gold crown with like a little like red gem at the top.
It's like an interesting little pyramid looking thing.
It's the only thing that'll sit on his head.
But we see him here and he is kind of panicking about his daughter. He says, oh, my dear sweet Princess Ruto, where has she gone? I'm so worried.
How worried are you really?
I'm not worried enough to get off his butt. So we can't really make any progress with him here. Yeah. He's just full on having a panic attack.
Right.
Or maybe just giving the illusion that he's worried while not doing anything.
It's hard to say, really, because the only little bits of insight we get to King Zora's demeanor or his personality only makes him seem kind of strange, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's a large dude who can't really move swiftly in any fashion whatsoever. And allegedly, according to other Zora in Zora's domain, he has other people looking for her, so
yeah,
that's something.
But you know what, for what it's worth, I think that most of those other people are the people we see on the other side of Zora's domain, like not being very effective.
Maybe
we will see like one or two of them in like Hylia, like mm-hmm. I don't want to throw shade at all of them.
We do have a little bit of insight also, I think it's at the bottom of the stairs in Zora's domain. There's a little wooden sign that someone wrote up that says something to the tune of "Please respect the king," right?
Uh-huh.
I don't know why someone wrote that. I don't know who would have written that and like left it there.
Yeah.
Like did the Grand Vizier get fired recently that like, so he had to leave something so people would be nice to the king?
That is the most nervously written sign in any of these games. Please respect the king. There's another sign in the actual throne room that says, "To hear the king's royal proclamation, stand on the platform and speak to him."
Does he have like a really quiet voice? He can't shout.
I don't know. Yeah. What do you think King Zora's voice sounds like?
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Oh,
my dear sweet Princess Rhoda, where is she called? I'm so worried.
I'll tell you what King Zora sounds like.
Mwee.
Please don't say anything about the king's weird voice.
That's really his whole thing.
Please, we know that all of the other Zora speak full-on English/Hylian,
uh-huh.
and the king won't stop making that weird little weep noise. Just be cool.
I think, I'm pretty sure King Zora, like at least this generation of King Zora is probably, you know, 1 or 2 years from being overthrown, huh?
Oh yeah, for sure. So we can't make much progress until we figure out Ruto's location. We'll figure that out in just a minute. Another cool thing here is this weird little mini game that's to the left.
That you have to walk through the throne room to get to? Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, oh boy, this game here, there's a Zora in a little cavern at the top of the waterfall, let's say.
Yeah.
This is the diving game. So essentially, the Zora here will take your money. And he'll throw it down the waterfall, and then he'll look at you, and he'll say, "Go get your money." And it's just like, what? This is the most absolute Chad Zora that has ever existed in any of these games. Like, what is happening here?
To be fair, I think he also throws additional money. Like, if you continue to play this game, you could, like, make money from this.
Sure. So you have to dive off the top of the waterfall, and then dive into the water, because it's, like, actually a little bit deep where the rupees landed. It's not at the top of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Diving in Ocarina of Time stinks, right? Like,
you just have to run off the edge of something into water, right?
I'm sorry. I don't mean the diving off of a cliff is very cool in Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Diving into water from the water.
Yeah. It is the dirt worst. It's pretty bad.
You basically, like, you know, you have a few seconds of going down, and then you go up, which takes a few seconds. You can kind of navigate in a direction on the way down, but you don't have full control.
Yeah.
But you certainly have a time limit to get all of the rupees here.
And if you get all of them, you get a reward. You do have to run back up to the guy to get the reward. Excuse me, King. I have to get my reward from this contest that comes straight through your throne room. I can't get over it.
It's very silly. But you do get a silver scale.
A silver scale.
Which allows you to dive deeper.
Yeah. You can dive what? Like, I think they give you a specific amount of distance you can dive, but like...
Allows you to dive up to 6 meters deep.
6 meters. As an American, that means nothing to me.
Right. So, I mean, it really doesn't mean much. It's like you can dive and then you'll get another one of these later and you can dive deep. And things are either not very deep or super deep.
Uh-huh.
It's like one of two levels.
Doesn't make a huge difference.
Yeah.
And like, you can play the game again. He'll throw the rupees to deeper parts of water that you can reach now. You know, you can just keep making money. I don't think you get any other rewards than that though.
Yeah. So the rupees are kind of a random value. Values. in subsequent plays of this game, and they may include occasionally a purple rupee or a huge rupee.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Which is great, honestly, if you have the wallet space for it. But what I want to know, Chris, is why does this game lead out from the throne room? Was this like decreed by the king? Is this the king's game?
No, so the king probably set this in place. One, because the waterfall itself functions as a sort of noise machine, right? You've got that good waterfall noise that probably lets the king drift off to sleep right nearby.
Okay.
But also, he gets a good laugh out of seeing this Zora absolutely bully passerbys and just chuck their money down.
Yeah.
And say, go jump for it.
That's fair.
You know, he's watching that and laughing.
You know, actually, I think it might only be non-Zora who have to run up through this place every time they play, right? Because Zora can swim up waterfalls.
I don't know if it's established that they can do that in this game, but we do know that eventually Zora can do that, which is super cool.
Yeah, that is rad as heck. I don't know. Personally, I'd be embarrassed. That's just me. I'd be embarrassed to have my little sign that says, you know, please be nice to me, and you have to walk up to this spot because I'm really quiet, you know, but also you can just ignore me and walk over and play this game over there. Like, it's...
Oh, yeah, you think it's, like, emasculating to some extent? He's just like, yeah, do you think he's, like, the Eeyore king? Like, is there something very Eeyore about his demeanor? I'm looking at, like, his eyes...
Oh, I don't want to think about Eeyore-type dialogue, but, like, with that voice.
Please find my Princess Rudolph.
Please find my Princess Rudolph.
All right, so basically, we're not getting any further here without figuring out what happened to Rudolph. We have enough clues that point us to Lake Hylia. We're not going to really talk about Lake Hylia this episode.
No, this is like a quick jaunt. We're going to have our eyes closed.
Yeah.
Not looking at anything over there. Maybe talk to a scarecrow.
Just stick our hand in the water and pull out a bottle with a letter.
Yes.
It's billed as an empty bottle. It says, you got an empty bottle. Put something inside and press C to use... what? Something's already inside.
Yeah.
And inside is a letter from Ruto. It says, help me. I'm waiting for you inside Lord Jabu Jabu's belly. Ruto. P.S. Don't tell my father.
Oh.
So naturally, the first thing we're going to do is go tell the father.
Yeah, how else are we going to get him to move? We got to tell him.
We got to tell him.
How did you guys miss this bottle, by the way?
Yeah, there are Zora here, and they missed this bottle.
It's like very close to the entrance to Zora's domain, and you guys just very plainly missed it.
Yeah, no one's very good at their job. No one's very good at in Hyrule. Like, let's be honest.
Oh, that explains it. They're guards.
They're guards. So I have a theory about this note in particular, but it doesn't fully resolve until we find Ruto.
What do you mean?
Well, I'll tease it a little bit. I don't think Ruto wrote this letter.
What?
So I don't want to fully just go into it.
Okay.
I don't fully want to go into
it. Yeah, let it cook. I'm going to be thinking about this one.
Let it cook. I don't think Ruto wrote this letter.
Okay.
Anyway.
What?
There's going to be some dialogue when we find Ruto,
yeah,
that kind of furthers that point. And I do think that someone might have motivation to keep us progressing.
No,
here.
I want to see if by the next time we record, if I figured it out.
Okay. So we bring this letter back to King Zora, and he says, our guardian god, Lord Jabu Jabu, what was the established voice again?
Me, me.
That's his voice.
Okay, so I'm going to say it in that voice, but I'm going to speak the English words. Our guardian god, Lord Jabu Jabu, would never reap my dear Princess Rudo. But since that stranger Ganondorf came here, Lord Jabu Jabu has been a little green around the gills. The evidence seems clear. Of course you'll go find Rudo. You can pass through here to the altar of Jabu Jabu. I'll take this letter. You keep the bottle. Please find my daughter.
You keep the bottle.
You keep the bottle.
Keep the bottle.
Are we both doing a Hey Arnold joke right now?
I wasn't thinking that, but...
Okay. So then we get just... one of the silliest cutscenes in this whole game. And it's the king slowly making his way to the right, about 6 inches to the right, maybe.
One butt cheek at a time.
One butt
cheek. Just constantly inching his way over.
It just takes comedically long. He's just moving to the right and allowing us to pass by him into Zora's Fountain.
It's a lake. It's basically a lake.
Essentially, it's a lake.
It's a lake that's penned off at one end with like stakes and stuff, which empties out into a river that we never see. I assume that leads to the waterfall above the entrance of Zora's domain.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
And like, it's a very large lake-like area with like some dead trees that are poking out at different points.
Before we get to the main attraction, we can talk about the fact that there's a great fairy fountain behind a boulder here.
Oh, you mean behind this Looney Tunes wall where like you try to blow up a boulder and then instead it blows up the whole wall?
Indeed. Yeah, it's very good. And the fairy itself is the Great Fairy of Magic. She says, I will give you a magic spell. Please take it. You get Furore's Wind.
Heck yeah.
Do you remember what Furore's Wind does?
Yeah, it lets you create essentially a save point within a dungeon that you can warp to once.
Yeah, so I've never once ever playing Ocarina of Time used Furore's Wind. Oh. Can you explain how this works fully?
I did need it once in the Shadow Temple, actually. If you cast the spell once, it creates like a glowing green point in the air that is your save point. And wherever else you go in the world, it could be in the dungeon, it could be in a different dungeon, it could be in the overworld, if you cast it again, you have the option to warp back to that exact point in that dungeon.
That's very interesting. So like if you need bombs, right, let's say, and you don't know that there's a Deku Scrub, you can cast the thing right where you need to blow up a wall,
uh-huh,
go get bombs, and then warp right back here?
Yep. One time. The point is destroyed once you warp back, so you'll have to cast it again if you want to use it again.
That's kind of cool. I like that. Functionally, very cool.
Honestly, like you said, if you need to go shopping, then that's the perfect way to do it. You can just resume where you left off.
Yeah, okay.
Why? No, but here's something I want to know, though, about it, Chris. It's described to you by this great fairy of magic as letting you warp to a point in a dungeon. What's a dungeon?
Ugh.
What does dungeon mean to you guys? What does dungeon mean in this world?
Gosh.
What's a dungeon?
Oh, that's such a bad case of using video game speak from a character in the world. That's like the worst case of it. That's an egregious example, isn't it?
Hey guys, hey, hashtag what's a dungeon, because I really would like to know what that means.
It just goes like back to like, what are the fairies' intentions, right? We had a big conversation about this in season 3 of Hello Hyrule, where it's like, are they just getting you to collect stuff for them? Do they have a purpose that they need Link to serve?
Oh, like, do they have like a greater knowledge of what's going on than we do?
Yeah. Are they serving Hylia?
Uh-huh.
Is this, I don't know. It's hard to not think that that's gamey-wamey.
Like, if you cast this, you can, it works in Jabu Jabu's belly, which we'll go to next episode.
Yeah.
So what exactly makes his belly, the interior of Jabu Jabu's guts, count as a dungeon?
Okay, now you're really asking the questions, right? Because a living creature,
yeah,
hey, multiple living creatures are dungeons.
It's a dungeon. I'm a dungeon. You're a dungeon. You hear people say your body is a temple. No, your body is a dungeon.
I was just thinking of the John Mayer version of your body is a dungeon. Women probably don't love that song as much as the original. I'm going to be honest with you. I hate the use of the word dungeon from an NPC in the game.
Mm-hmm. It's the same as people saying, like, press the A button.
Yeah, it just stinks on ice. It's no good. Anyway, if we go back to the fountain, we get, you want to know what a dungeon is. Let's talk about it, buddy. There's a big old whale right in the middle of this fountain, isn't there?
Whale, turtle, fish?
That's one way to put it. I think it's mostly a whale, right? It's like you can see its front and you can see its back all kind of floating in the water here. It looks like an oversized fish in this game. It's wearing a helm. Honestly, it looks like it has Zora's sapphire in its helm, doesn't it?
Kinda, yeah. A little bit.
Maybe more so in the N64 one if you look at...
I'm more looking at the big, like, ruby star on the top of its hat.
Ruby star?
Yeah. I'll send you a picture of what he looks like on the 3DS.
Oh, he looks very different in these two, huh?
Yeah, if you look at his full body, he's got the shape of like a walrus or a seal.
Yeah, his helm is completely different. So it does still have the Zora sapphire, but above it there is like a weird star.
Yeah, like a little trucker hat that he has.
Yeah. Also in the 3DS version, oh, I guess it's in both versions, but like the helm is like carved out around his eyes in a weird way.
I mean, it's just fitted for him, I guess.
It's fit. Oh, that's so odd. Oh, this creature is so weird. I love Lord Jabu Jabu. I love all Leviathans. Lord Jabu job as a Leviathan, by the way. Yes. We've talked about these in previous seasons.
Right.
It's just big fish that are very important for some reason. They're Leviathans.
Whales and fish and other such creatures that are like huge. Usually they fly. Jabu Jabu does not fly. As far as we're aware.
Yeah. I mean, hey, who knows? He could.
Can Jabu Jabu fly, but he's just chilling here?
There is something interesting. I do believe in Twilight Princess you can catch, or is it Majora's Mask?
I think what you're referring to is in Majora's Mask, where you can't, where you, in a fishing hole, you can catch something that looks like Jabu Jabu. Or is it just in the 3DS version of Ocarina?
Okay, so there is in Majora's Mask 3D, and this might be completely unrelated, there is something called Lord Chapu Chapu.
Yes.
Which visually is like very close to Lord Jabu Jabu,
right?
But it's like something that you could fish for in the 3DS version specifically.
Yeah, it's almost the same model, if not exactly the same model.
Yeah, Chapu Chapu is the legendary king of the swamp in that game. So yeah, even in Termina, this thing has some clout.
But yeah,
it's cool seeing Jabu Jabu. It's a weird, freaky little thing.
He's a weird freaky with his like huge popped eyes.
Yeah, it's by far the weirdest dungeon, but we're gonna get super into that in the next episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, what we do is we pour out a fish in front of it and it opens its big old mouth. And does it eat us or do we walk into it?
He inhales and sucks you in.
So this is obviously kind of referencing Pinocchio probably, right?
Something like that. Yeah, I think so.
I feel like that's kind of what they're going for. But yeah, he sucks us into his mouth and then we're going to be off into the next dungeon. But for us, I guess it's time to travel into the future.
Do it to it.
All right. We talked about three different places here.
Zora's River, almost exactly the same, except it's snowing and there's no Kukos.
No Kukos, no Bean Boy.
No Bean Boy. Bean Man... Bean Boy Man went home and took his Kukos with him, probably to become a re-dead somewhere.
Ate way too much candy. Rotted his brain.
We're probably...
Rotted him from the inside out.
Chances are you're not even going to walk around this area. You're going to take a shortcut from Lost Woods. That's what I do every time I play this part of the game, because I don't want to run through Zora's River again.
No, no need to.
There's no need to.
You'll also eventually learn songs that'll take you all over the map.
For sure. For sure. I mean, there's not one that'll take you to Zora's Domain, though.
No, yeah, you're right. That's a fair point, isn't it?
There's one that'll take you, like, to Lake Hylia, which you can later take to Zora's Domain, but, you know.
There it is.
That's later. That's, like, several episodes from now that we even have that ability.
Uh-huh.
But good news, despite the cold weather and the snow, the waterfall has not frozen over.
Are you sure it's snowing here?
It is snowing. On the 3DS, at least.
I don't know that it's snowing on the N64 version. I might be wrong. I might be misremembering.
At least, at the very least, standing near the waterfall, it is snowing.
Cool. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Which, again, has not frozen over. Thank goodness. As an adult, you should definitely be able to jump through that waterfall, but you play the song again, you stop the water again, you jump through, and that's basically Zora's River in the future.
That's basically it. Zora's Domain is similarly kind of sparse. It's only inhabited by King Zora and the shopkeeper at this point.
Right.
And got some bad news. They're both frozen over.
Ah.
So yeah, you come back here after going to an ice cavern later. We'll talk about the ice cavern probably in the Water Temple episode.
Uh-huh.
But you got Blue Flame at that point, and you can use the Blue Flame to unfreeze, to melt, to unfreeze. Jeez. That's a real reverse vacuum situation.
I feel like in magical terms, unfreeze is fair game.
Fair enough. So you unfreeze the ice around King Zora.
Red ice, by the way.
Red ice. That's that cursed stuff.
Which I don't recall if this is mentioned, but the blue fire that you use is like cold to the touch. So presumably red ice would be hot?
Oh, that's a bad thought, because he's in there.
He doesn't die.
Doesn't die. Also, don't know where the other Zora are, but they're not dead, because we will see them in the ending cutscene.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all gone.
My assumption is that they're all frozen under the ice. That's what I was thinking.
It's again, we talked about this in the Hyrule Field episode, but this game gets weirdly quiet when you're an adult. Yeah. And maybe that's like a weird metaphor for like
not having friends.
Yeah, the way you surround yourself with people when you're young, and as you get older, life kind of quiets out. You maybe find
Chris,
a few people.
I'm sorry. I think you're looking a little too deep at this. I think it's more that like Ganondorf's killing everybody.
It might be that Ganondorf's killing everybody. Okay. Anyway, moving on to Zora's Fountain.
No. Well, hang. I want to point out that like I think the red ice, because especially on the 3DS, the red ice looked really cool.
Okay.
Because it's like kind of like fractal and sharp looking.
It looks like a diamond.
Sort of. In some places, it kind of has the shape of like a Fabergé egg, but in other places, it looks like it's like ragged and cool looking.
Nice. Yeah, it's definitely a cool effect, even in the 64.
Two other notes that take place here in Zora's Domain. You've got like a slipping and sliding animation in any place that's cold and frozen, which is very funny on 3DS. I don't remember what it looks like on N64.
I kind of forgot also, I'm sorry.
And in this game, in cold locations, Link will shiver and sneeze now if you let him stand still.
He will. It's a great little touch. That happens in N64 also.
Yeah.
I love the idea that an idle animation can change dynamically based on the location. A cool little thing about that idle animation, and I'm hoping I remember to talk about this later, when you fight Bongo Bongo, after you beat him, you're just on that platform, and he does this animation, implying that wherever you are, it's very cold.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we could talk about that later. In Zora's Fountain, again, with the quiet theme, there's no Jabu Jabu.
Yeah, because he flew away, right?
Yeah, he flew away. He's like, I'm out of here. But yeah, there are some ice platforms that will lead us to the ice cavern so that we can get what we need to.
Right. I guess Zora's Fountain has a higher salt content. That's why it didn't freeze.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's as good of a... I mean, it's exposed to the sun. It's exposed to the sun out here, right?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, you got me there.
I mean, there are ice platforms, but don't think about it too much. You don't gotta think about that too much. We do know that there is another character in there who maybe they helped create those ice platforms, but I don't know.
Oh, interesting point.
Anything else, though, before we round out this episode?
Not really. The shopkeep, when you unfreeze the Zora store, doesn't have a lot to say. Like, everybody's frozen. Which, by the way, why did... Because Ganondorf and his moms did this, right?
Right.
Like, they froze King Zora. Why did they, like, think it was necessary to, like, block off the Zora shop with red ice?
Because they knew that there was a Zora's tunic in there, and the Zora's tunic will make things a little bit easier for Link.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. My only guess was that they were mad about the expensive fish.
They were also just, like, resentful about, maybe resentful about the expensive fish. They were hungry.
Yeah, well.
They weren't going to pay 200 rupees. Oof. On that note, do you want to jump into our Hello, Hyrule travel recommendations?
I would love to. I actually have some prepared.
Heck yeah, so do I.
So, what is your recommended photo op?
My recommended photo op is get a good snap just as someone is diving after the rupees get thrown off of that waterfall.
Oh.
Right, so you have the rupees in midair, you have a human being jumping through the air at them.
That would be pretty good.
And you got a beautiful waterfall, yeah.
You gotta make sure you have a good diving form, because otherwise it's gonna look like you're frantically jumping after your money.
You know what's very funny to me? Thank you for saying that, because that gives me an opening to talk about America's Greatest Game, Survivor.
Oh no.
Survivor, a show that has existed for 40 plus seasons now.
Uh-huh.
It's very funny to me that people still go on Survivor and they don't know how to dive. And people will just flop into water as they dive into the water. It not only like looks silly, but it seems very painful if you're diving from a high place into water.
Chris, I'm sorry to have to burst your bubble here, but I'm pretty sure their inability to dive is among the reasons they were picked for the show.
It could be. It could be. Yeah. But what's your recommended photo op?
My recommended photo op is taking a selfie under that entrance canopy. Because I know you haven't seen the one on the 3DS, but it is just so pretty over there. Like, I think there's a rainbow at one point.
And this is in Zora's Domain specifically, or in Zora's River?
It's right at Zora's River, right before the entrance to Zora's Domain.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, no, it's really nice there.
So what is your recommended attraction?
My recommended attraction for Zora's Domain is Zora Volleyball.
Zora Volleyball.
Yeah. I can't think of any race from Zelda that would play volleyball better than a Zora. Zora.
So you're specifically talking about like when you play volleyball in a pool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which actually, now that I say that, Gerudo would probably rule at volleyball for sure.
Gerudo are probably so good at volleyball. Are you kidding? Holy cow. That's very good. That's very fun. Yeah. As they pop out of the water, they do seem like they would hit a mean spike.
Yeah, for sure.
So my attraction is, I have two. I didn't really know which one to go with. I have the Zora's River Log Flume, which seems like a safe, reliable bet.
I'm going to have to nix that one on you, Chris, because in the episode I am currently editing, you specifically request that we that we cancel out ones that we've done a million times.
Okay. So fortunately, I'm so glad I prepared a second one. I picked Kuko Jump Target Practice.
Whoa. Okay.
So like, you remember the opening hours of Skyward Sword where Zelda pushes you and has you like land on a target?
Yeah.
Do something like that. Have a nice target somewhere in Zora's River.
Okay.
And have kids or people, adults, you know, take a Kuko and try to land as close to the center as possible and give them a reward.
So from those higher peaks, you'll be like, you'll have a target somewhere?
Yeah, and you just try to land as close to the center as possible.
That's pretty good. I like that. Like, reminds me a little bit of Monkey Target from the first Super Monkey Ball.
There you go. I don't really know anything about Monkey Ball, but that makes sense to me from what I know about it.
One of my favorite minigames from an early video game. Like, so good. Anyway, what is your best bite?
You're not going to like this.
I'm not going to like this? Why, Chris?
Because I did say fried frog legs, and the frogs do talk. Here's the thing about The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, though. Eventually most things do talk, right? So gotta do it eventually. Fried frog legs, you got multiple colored frogs, right? And it would be fun if the colors of the frogs play into the flavor of those fried frog legs. So you got the, it's almost similar to the beans that we were talking about earlier. We got the blue guy, that is a baked in ranch flavor in that sucker.
Whoa.
We got the purple guy, really wishing I didn't start so early with purple, because that's a hard one to decipher. Maybe it tastes a bit sour. Let's go with that. We got the yellow
sour
one. It's gonna be zesty, it's gonna be lemony. I like that.
Okay,
we got the red one, that guy's a spicy fellow. none of them want to be eaten. I feel terrible about this. You also have the white one. That one's going to be like a nice ranch.
I
said ranch for the blue guy as well. So the blue guy,
it's Chris.
They're both ranch.
I have to commend you, Chris, for having something that it, like a food that is seen as like high class, right? Like frog's legs.
And then just making it just
bring it down to ranch.
And a lot of ranch. 2/5 ranch. What is your best bite?
My best bite for Zora's Domain is shaved red ice.
Oh, okay.
It's red ice, but it's hot.
Oh, red hot ice.
You get the savory flavors. You get like a honey barbecue shaved ice.
Okay, you said savory flavors, and I gotta challenge you on this. What does savory ice taste like to you? Like, what is that in your mind?
No, just like the flavors that you put onto it, because it's still ice, but the temperature is the opposite.
Okay, interesting.
Right, like you can have like a pulled pork shaved red ice.
What are you saying? You can't say a sentence like that 2 hours into a recording.
Of course I can.
Oh, my brain is fighting itself. Okay. You know what? I thought I had an outlandish one, but yours,
You get any flavor. You get chili, creamed corn, like whatever, like you wanted to put, like a salsa, shaved red ice.
And on that note, do you have a motto?
I do.
For Zora's Domain and or Zora's River.
And or Zora's Fountain. But yes, I do.
Okay.
I do have a motto. Chris, do you?
I have two.
You have two? Do you want to sandwich them?
Okay. My first motto, and I guess this will be for Zora's Domain. Come on in. The water's fine.
Okay. It's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, it's all water in there, right? Yeah. So it's like, and also in regards to locations in Ocarina of Time, Zora's Domain is fine. The music's great.
I would say also they probably wouldn't say come on in, but since we're given all of the blockades and such that to keep people away.
Yes.
But since this is a travelogue, I think we can skirt that under the rug.
Uh-huh. So what is your motto for this location?
My motto for Zora's Domain is live free or dive.
Ah. I should have gotten my two out of the way first because you just nailed it with yours. How do we bounce back from that? I really like that.
Brought Massachusetts full circle.
That's good stuff. My motto for Zora's River is a river so strong it could rehydrate a demon king. And that's a little fun thing for The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom out in stores now.
If you want to
talk about Tears of
Chris,
the Kingdom.
Chris, you absolute jerk. Did you rent out your motto space to Nintendo for an advertisement?
I don't know what you're talking about. I just wanted to take this opportunity to talk about The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, MSRP $70. You can find it on the Nintendo eShop or www.amazon.com.
Chris, it's been out for 2 months at this point.
Right. You can still buy the game. And come talk to us in Discord about your experience with it. Anyway.
Shameless. Just shameless.
I just want to talk about Rehydrated Ganondorf. It's not like I'm making money off of Tears of the Kingdom.
So wet Ganondorf. So your motto would then be like, come be your best wet self.
Your wettest and baddest self. All right. On that note, do you want to get off of this? It's so warm in this bus. It's like we're frozen by red ice. Do you want to get out and go to the post office?
I would love that.
Yeah.
Postcards.
Postcards.
We are in the post office. No one's here.
The post office in, remind me which episode this is, Zora's Domain?
Zora's Domain.
You think it's like a damp post office? Do you think?
Yeah, not a place you want to store paper. Oh. I don't think that's a good idea.
All right. Well, we will try to salvage what we can from these wet notes. Do you want to start us off?
We have a postcard from Tyler. I love the podcast, and I have been binging all the episodes since I discovered you guys. I just listened to your most recent Tears of the Kingdom bonus episode, and I had a thought for something I potentially would like to see in a future Zelda game. What if we were fighting a new type of enemy who had powers that required you to go either back in time or travel to shrines devoted to past heroes and acquire either powers, tunics, or weapons from different descendants of Link in previous games? Sounds like a Warriors game so far.
Mm-hmm.
These items would be something that's big from their game that you'd recognize, such as the Fierce Deity's Mask or the ability to transform into a wolf, just examples. You could also make a whole dungeon type area where you could play through it in the art style from that game, but modernized. And at the end, like the shrines, you'd meet up with that Link of that version where he'd bestow upon you his power or gift. So you'd have an entire inventory from past Zelda weapons or gear. Keep up the great work. Thanks, guys. Can't wait to see what you think and look forward to more podcast episodes. So, Tyler, it sounds like you want a Kingdom Hearts game, but just Zelda?
That, honestly, not the worst idea, but I don't think that would be fun as like the next mainline Zelda.
No, it would have to be a spinoff.
Yeah, that's
it would have to be a spinoff.
That's like a fun fan service game. I mean, the Hyrule Warriors games kind of serve that purpose for the most part, but I get it. You want to play like an actual Zelda playing game and do that stuff.
Yeah, where it's like, that could actually be interesting where you have a time traveling Link who actually meets the other Links. It's a shame that Nintendo is embarrassed of and hates the timeline now.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the place to get too deep into that, but
they hate it. They hate it, Chris.
I don't know. I think that would be fun. I don't know. It's like Easter eggs are fun and novel when you get them like here and there.
But when you leave them alone for too long, you find one from Easter 5 months ago rotting in the hedges.
Yeah, because it starts to smell bad. I just wonder if like a full game of Easter eggs would kind of start to wear on you after a while. But it would be fun to kind
of enter Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay, we got to start cutting some of these Tears of the Kingdom references. it's a cool idea. It could be fun. I just don't know if I would want that from a mainline game.
Yeah, it's cool, but doesn't seem appropriate for a mainline game. I agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we have a postcard in from Josh, who I have to assume hates me because of what he's about to do to my vocal cords.
Oh no, you're gonna do your Fat Albert voice?
No, I'm gonna do he has a Goron postcard, but it seems to be in the style of the WWE wrestler The Rock. I haven't watched wrestling in, I've got to imagine, 20 plus years
since The Rock was in it, I think.
Right, so I will do my best here. Finally, Daruk has come back to this random post office. You may be asking yourself, why?
Why in the blue heck would Daruk, champion of the Gorons, make his way across time and space just so Daruk could write in this one simple letter? It is because, Pete and Chris, Daruk is not only the Gorons' champion, he is the people's champion. The fact of the matter is this. Daruk couldn't spend another minute, nay, another second, without answering the call of the millions and millions of Daruk's fans. You know why they were calling Daruk? It was because they needed the Daruk's help. They needed Daruk's assistance.
The Daruk is kind of redundant, isn't it? Because you're doing the... Anyway.
It is. Pete and Chris, Daruk has a question for you. Are you listening?
Wait, Chris, do you want me to take over really quick so that the rest of your voice, I could take a crack at this?
Do you want to?
Yeah, I'm going
to
take a crack at it.
Have fun.
Although I might lapse into Randy Savage. We'll find out.
That's fine.
Pete and Chris, Daruk has a question for you. Are you listening? What does a Dodongo taste like? It doesn't matter what a Dodongo tastes like. The only thing that matters is that this Sunday night, Ganondorf will know what consequences are for disrespecting the people after he goes one-on-one with the Great One. And Daruk Gurrendang tease that this Sunday night, Daruk will walk out once again the HWF champion.
What does HWS stand for? Hyrule Wrestling
Federation, right?
I got it. Got it. I had to think about that one for just an additional 2 seconds.
And now the payoff for this entire email.
Here we go.
If you smell what Daruk is cooking.
Thank you for saving me on that one, Pete. And then he has some out of character comments. Guys, you really do put on such a great podcast, and I love seeing all the creativity and hard work you put into creating this wonderful community. Your podcasts are amazing, and it's been such a great joy getting to know you both through this silly game. Humor and chemistry are attributes you can't fake in media production, and it just comes naturally to you both. Keep up the great work.
Oh, that was very kind.
Thank you. Like, he knew he had to get some nice words in there to redeem what he did to us. So, but thank you.
It's just so we're not just reading a bit.
It's been nice getting to hear from you in the Discord, Josh.
This next one is from Charlie. Greetings from Hyrule Town. I am a Picori researcher and found a strange black disc on my journey. I took it back to town and discovered a new invention called a record player. I put the disc on it, and now I am hooked on your show. I have never heard the word Minish to describe the Picori before. I heard about Jabbernuts, and these things have extended my research more than you can imagine. Anyway, I heard there is tension between Gerudo and the King. I hope that gets resolved. Also, out of character, Charlie mentions, I heard about you guys from the Legend of Zelda Lorecast and immediately loved it. I have to ask, what do Lynels taste like? That's kind of on the fence of cannibalism, right?
I feel like we've answered that in the previous episode, right? We could probably skip right through it.
Oh, well, actually, we haven't run into Lynels yet. Actually, you know what? That might be on the table because you can eat Lynel bits in Breath of the Wild.
I don't know.
Spare ribs. You ever have spare like ribs. Spare ribs from like American Chinese?
Perfect. Spare ribs is perfect.
Also, if I could give a rating, it would be 100 stars out of 5. Anyway, I have a new business idea. KFC, Kakariko Fried Cuco. What do you think? I think we said that in a previous episode.
Yeah, I think I got that one in the Kakariko episode with Jake.
I also want to elaborate on your Twilight Princess theory. I don't think the Kokiri are monkeys, but rather the Ordon villagers. In the credits of Ocarina of Time, you see the Kokiri celebrating at Lon Lon Ranch. My point is, Kokiri don't die when they leave the forest. Yeah, we've addressed that.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their immortality. I don't think it's a coincidence that Ordon Village is just there in the forest. You see their symbols in the forest temple. Let me know what you think. Yeah, no, we super talk about this in like more than one episode this season, although they might not have all come out yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get on board with that. I mean, I kind of like them being the monkeys a little bit more.
I like the monkeys idea because I feel like, what if it's like half and half because like Ocarina of Time, Link got together with Malin and that they settled down there and where Lon Lon Ranch was and that's where Ordon is. And then like,
exactly.
They invited the Kokiri there. So it's kind of half and half. Both are true.
There we go. That's the one I like. That's canon now. We got one more email in from Sitaru. Sitaru says, hello, Hyrule. My name is Sitaru. I am a Zonai who has recently put down some roots in Hyrule. Found a strange little Sheikah device known as a Teriko and stumbled upon your podcast while trying to figure out how my new little friend works. I found your insights incredibly interesting, and you've never failed to put a smile on my face in these dark times. I've heard worrisome tales of a man named Ganondorf as of late. I hope nothing bad is to come.
Uh-oh. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I hope to explore Hyrule further based on your recommendations. The story of the Minish sounds most interesting. Perhaps I shall travel there next. Yours sincerely, Sitaru.
Wait, so you know what Teruko is, right?
No, what?
In Age of Calamity, Teruko's the little egg baby.
Oh, I forgot the name. Perfect. Thank you for reminding me. Out of character, she says, I found your podcast recommended on my Spotify, and I binge listened to the entire thing while playing Tears of the Kingdom. In fact, as of writing this email, I beat it an hour ago.
Hey!
Congratulations, Sitaru. I hope you enjoyed that ending. Whilst I've played a handful of Zelda games over the years, I've only ever beaten five of them, but I'm very much in love with the series. I get it. You don't have to beat too many to feel strongly about the series. I'm in the middle of writing a Zelda-inspired D&D campaign and at the end of a creative writing course, so listening to you guys has really inspired me to keep going.
Heck
awesome.
Yes, heck yes. Zelda D&D is very good.
Keep up the good work. Thank you so much for the many laughs you guys have provided. And that's exactly why it's so important to give any podcast you enjoy ratings or reviews, because that stuff boosts visibility and helps others find stuff. So thank you, Sitaru, for writing in, and thank you to everyone who, you know, rates the podcast.
Yeah, we're getting close to 100 on Apple Podcasts.
Holy cow. who's gonna be that lucky number 100?
Hey, but there's only one way to find out, huh? Definitely not pandering at all, just, you know, curious about who will be number 100.
Just please, the one thing we ask, please don't edit your reviews to be number 100. That one's not gonna work.
Does not contribute.
And that also super makes our time collecting these postcards way more difficult, because we're not gonna read any re-reviews. So thank you. And with that, on that note, let's close up the post office and get back to Zora's Domain.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna catch a disease in here with all this mold.
Ugh.
Yeah!
If you have any opinions on...
Mweep.
You can send us a postcard at haroldpod@gmail.com or by dropping us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read your message here, and you'll be helping more listeners like you to find the show. You can also find the show on Twitter, Insta, and Tumblr at HyrulePod. And if you want to find us individually on Twitter, I am at The Edge of My Pete.
I am at A Man Named Babs. You can also, if you know people who like The Legend of Zelda, you know, we know where this is in the calendar year. There's probably a lot of people talking about The Legend of Zelda these days.
Yep.
If you think someone would like this podcast, share it with them. Let them know that you think they would like it. That means a lot to us. We love hearing little stories about that. Similarly, you can find us on Discord. The links are in the socials. You should do that. Talk to us about Ocarina. Talk to us about Tears of the Kingdom. Talk to us about any game that you're playing and enjoying.
Yeah.
Also, you could support us on Ko-fi. You don't have to, but like, even if you do a one-time donation of $1, you'll get access to a bunch of bonus Hello Hyrule episodes very early.
Yep.
You'll get access to some game chats that are not Zelda specific, and you'll get a special role in the Discord, and you'll get our gratitude. We super appreciate it.
Yep.
We don't block Hello Hyrule episodes off behind Ko-fi. Anything that is Hello Hyrule that goes up there will eventually go out on the main feed as well.
Right.
But there's just some fun extra stuff there as well. And one more time, we want to say thank you to Chill Boy Beats for the use of our intro and outro music. If you want to hear more Zelda synthwave goodness, you can find his album, The Hero of Synth, on YouTube, Spotify, and Bandcamp. And by the time this goes up, The Hero of Synth 2 will probably be up as well.
Yes.
So just a ton of really good music on that channel.
I really hope so. I've been looking forward to that. But that's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Next episode, we got to get up in them guts, Chris.
Oh. We're entering the third mouth of this game. It's almost comical.
But until then, I've been Pete.
I've been Chris.
Excuse me, podcast. Put a little bit of a twang on it that time.
little southern pride to go with those fried frog legs that you're going to be eating.
Uh-huh.
Again, one of them is ranch.
No.
One of them is spicy. One of them is lemony.
You're going to have to do better than that.
I'm really hung up on that purple one. I don't know what a purple frog
you're gonna have to
like.
Expand your spice rack, because you didn't say blackened. You didn't say slap your mama. You didn't say like, what, you're making a face. You don't know that one?
No, I do not know that one.